You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Talking Heads Review Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be reviewing podcast Jimmy Adkins' Mysterious World. He's going to be talking about 9/11 conspiracies, 9/11 attacks, and the events that happened on September 11th many years ago. Let's get into it.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Heads podcast. In this show, we take great snips from other shows, shine a bit of light, add a bit of context, and always add some humor. We are not affiliated with any of the shows mentioned in the podcast. However, if you are interested in the shows discussed, you can easily find them by going to the link in the podcast. And now, to the show.
And the real world is not an idea. It is not words. Reality is...
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. This week is going to be a little different. For one, Adam is not here. I'm joined by my roommate, Hayden. He's going to be filling in for Adam. We talk a lot about like conspiracy theories, and this is one that always comes up. Same thing with Adam, too. We have that, I don't know what it is, but for every reason, we enjoy talking about conspiracy theories. So 9/11 was this past week, now 4 days ago. So I thought, what a great idea to talk about some conspiracies surrounding the events. What do you think?
Dude, it's been a wild ride. 22-year anniversary now. A lot of stuff has come out, and what we'll see in the podcast, there's a lot of evidence that points to, you know, the attacks being real, and there's a lot of misconstrued information when it comes to these attacks. So let's get to the bottom of it.
Yeah. Do me a favor. Get a little bit more closer to that microphone for me. Yeah. There we go. Yes, it has been 22 years, which is pretty crazy. I was not alive at the time. Same. I was actually in my mother's stomach at the time. I was born in November, late November of 2001. So yeah, I wasn't there to experience it live. Obviously, I've watched a bunch of videos and learned a lot about it. But yeah, there is a lot of things where there's like the regular narrative of what happened, and then there is like the actual truth of what happened, and it's really hard to discern between the two of them. But I do want to kind of try and stick to this podcast that I had you listen to earlier. Yeah, what did you think of it?
I was actually really impressed with Jimmy Atkin. He seems like at the beginning of the podcast, he states the fact that he wants to stay away from things like confirmation bias, and he wants to be strict with how he's actually talking about these conspiracies and not addressing them in like the crazy tinfoil hat methods. And I respect that. It's a very journalistic approach and something that we need when we talk about something as serious as 9/11.
Yeah. Interesting. I just looked up their podcast because he was saying that they do a bunch of other similar things as this.
Yeah.
First one I saw was talking about UFOs with Ben Carson. Do you remember who Ben Carson is?
I do not.
He was that black presidential candidate who was a neurosurgeon.
Yeah, that's right.
And he ran back in, I think, 2020.
Yeah.
He was also one of the guys, I'm pretty sure it was him, who was saying that like gay marriage is a choice. And he used like prisons as an example. Like, how come all these people who go to prison come out as gay afterwards? So I don't know. But yeah, they've done a bunch of other episodes.
Yeah, I heard on this podcast he talked about how they covered Project Northwoods, which is another good parallel between the attacks on 9/11 and Northwoods was that the conspiracy that the U.S. government was funding the Cuba or getting cocaine from Cuba and bringing it into the United States and is responsible for the crack epidemic in Los Angeles. I believe that's what it was. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, there was some weird shit that the government was doing. Do you know when that was? Like, when they were doing
Northwoods?
Because I know that back in New York during, like, the Vietnam War era, the cops were doing that a lot with heroin. They would, like, arrest people for heroin, take their heroin, cut it down, and then resell it again.
Mm-hmm. I think that was around, like, the 1970s, 80s. It was during the Cold War.
Around the same time then, yeah. Yeah, just looking through, there's a lot of other ones. They've done some on, like, ancient Egypt. There's one on time travel and Captain America. Huh. Some good episodes, though. They're all about an hour to 2 hours long. But, yeah, I agree. I liked the way that Jimmy talked about things that happened. It seemed like it was very well laid out. They had a lot of evidence. There was some things that I was, like, some of these conspiracies where I was like kind of thinking that might be what's going on. And then he would like explain like, no, that's not really how it would have worked. Yeah. Like I've heard the one about, like the Pentagon crash being a missile.
Yeah.
And then, that one was weird though, because there was also like a couple days before 9/11, what was it? The world, whoever said we lost like a couple $1 trillion. We have no idea who it was, or we have no idea where it went. And then the part that they were doing that accounting in the Pentagon is the part that blew up.
It's the wing, yeah. They couldn't account for $2.3 trillion in an audit. And, you know, like $2.3 trillion is not a small number by any means to just.
No,
you know,
that's
have
a very, very
for.
Large number.
Right. And then for the next day, the accounting wing to be destroyed, like.
Yeah, that's a little bit weird.
It's a little too coincidental for it to not be anything.
Yeah. But I've seen a lot of people talk about that, like, oh, it might have been a missile. But then they had a woman come on the show towards the end of the podcast who was a aircraft investigative something like that. She was in college at the time.
She worked in the Air Force for 26 years. She was in the she taught the RCIA. But she laid out some good evidence. She was taking a she was supposed to get a mission out in I think it was Cuba. So she was studying language at an institute only 4 miles from the actual Pentagon. And they all heard the explosion. And when they heard the explosion, they went out to the Pentagon. And when they got there, she said the Red Cross was there. And since they were military at the time, they were asked to help with the Pentagon, helping the people who were injured, stuff like that. But she was also saying, like, she saw a bunch of, like, the plane parts. She saw, like, you know, the I forget what the chemical is, but in all of the way or the ways that aircrafts are painted, they use the same color paint.
Yeah, it's like an anti-erosion paint that they haven't. She was saying that on the inside of airplanes is where you see it, because obviously the outside is painted however it's supposed to look, but they don't paint the inside at all. And she saw a lot of like medium to large pieces of this like green metal stuff, which looked like airplane parts. There was also, she saw it looked like compressor blade fans or fan blades. Which would not make sense being in a missile.
Right.
Especially something that size, you know.
Right. And they were large enough to be, like, how could you have brought it there, too? Like, some people could say that the airplane, or some people have said that the airplane pieces were planted, but these pieces are huge. So, like, move those into position in that time just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. I've also heard the theory about, which is another one that he kind of dismissed in a way, but that these were like military planes or even not even planes, you know, that theory's
that is
kind of enticing,
theory.
But I think the one about not being planes is, I feel, a far-fetched.
Just because
like people are like, oh, it was holograms. But then you look at the side of the building and it's like a perfectly airplane shaped hole in the building. And, you know, there's also all of the calls from the planes, which
like
was like the biggest piece of evidence. Yeah. And they did spent a lot of time on that. And even like the first plane, which I never even heard this, but there was the first plane that was hijacked. The woman, one of the stewardess, like called and said like they were hijacked and stuff like that. And that there was like mace and all this shit. And then obviously plane crashed in the building and the call went silent. But I had never heard that audio before.
Oh, yeah. I think another good thing that the podcast pointed out was the fact, I forget what her name was, but she was a pretty influential figure. She was known for critiquing things and whatnot. but she was rather famous, and she was on one of the planes that got hijacked.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember what her name was.
Yeah, but her husband reached out, and she called him, and there's, like, evidence of her being on that plane that actually hit the towers.
Yeah.
And it's weird to have, like, that influential of a figure on a plane that's going to crash into the same buildings if it's just being set up and it's a fake military plane.
Yeah, it was also, like, they were confirming in the air the terrorists based on their seats in certain planes. Yeah. Like, I think in the first one, they figured out who the terrorist was based on where they came from in the cabin and their seats and stuff. So that's pretty strong evidence as well.
Oh, I agree.
You know, they have all the records for that. And it would also be logistically really, really hard to, like, I mean, divert these planes and then have similar sized and all this. Like, and they have all the transponder data for all these airplanes and stuff like that. So it seems like that part is pretty hard to argue with.
Yeah. I think that definitely discounts, like, the fake plane theories and whatnot. But when we get to, like, some of the other key points of these conspiracies on why 9/11 could have been an inside job, they also brought up the point about the steel beams, you know?
Yeah.
Jet fuel can't melt steel beams, which, I mean, while that is empirically true and physically speaking, yes, jet fuel burns at 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit, right? And then steel beams melt at 2,300. But, I mean, like, it doesn't need to be fully melted for these structural beams to lose their integrity, which they discuss. And, you know, you have already so much weight and all these floors cracking, it's definitely going to cause these structural things to weaken and then eventually collapse in on itself.
Yeah, that was one of the things that they talked about, too, because I know there's a lot of people who put forward the idea that it was like a demolition, like a controlled explosion, like there was explosives in the thing. But I don't know. I think that seems highly unlikely.
I agree.
Although there was one, I saw a video a while ago, like a really weird video where people were, it was like right after the first plane hit the tower and the elevator shaft, I guess, exploded.
Oh.
The whole elevator shaft exploded. And I guess at the lobby is where it like came out, like the explosion came out. So the lobby exploded in the first tower that it got hit. And I was watching this video of this firefighter talking about, like, he was at the lobby when, maybe it wasn't a firefighter, somebody else, but they were saying, like, it felt like a real explosion. Like, it felt like someone, like, planted an explosion at the lobby.
Interesting.
So that one's a little bit weird for me, but...
I could see that, but was it when, like, the second plane actually hit the other building? Because is that the reason why they were in
the building? No, it was the first plane. They were in the lobby when the first plane hit, and then, like, the elevator shaft blew out.
Yeah.
Which was really weird.
But that one's interesting because, like, what they said in the podcast, you know, you have this 767 hitting the towers at 500 miles per hour.
It's a huge plane.
It's a huge plane. They have a lot of fuel. It's going to cause undoubtedly a big explosion at that point.
Yeah, definitely. And you can see that from the wreckage. I mean, and that makes sense logically why the second tower would go first in theory, because, you know, you hit it a lot lower in the plane, in the building. It was like middle of it. And so you have all that extra weight holding it down. And so that makes sense why it would go first. They also talked a lot about Building 7, which is a really, really hot topic for... Right. A lot of these ideas, and they were talking about, because when you watch the video of the thing going down, it looks like a controlled demolition.
It really does. Yeah, there's no way
it looks like a controlled demolition. However, they were saying that, you know, based on the other two buildings coming down, that building was severely structurally damaged, and there was like pieces of debris that took out, I think it was like 25% of
the structural integrity.
Like 25% of the building,
right?
And there was fires. I guess the sprinkler system did not go off
because
it was
failed.
It was hit by debris as well.
Yeah.
And then they were saying that the steel beams, I was arguing in the podcast that the steel beams basically expanded and uncoupled themselves from the ends. And then that was what like led to the building. They said it kind of imploded, like the inside
there was
fell
like
out
one
first.
Structure that was super, it was holding up a majority of the floors, and that one got much of the heat from that. But I think one thing that's like interesting to note about Tower 7 was the fact that it housed a lot of these like government agencies.
There was a lot of
CIA,
like
Defense
documents,
Department, IRS, like all of these crazy powerful government entities. And like along with like the Pentagon and having the $2.3 trillion of assets missing, and then this department just magically kind of getting hit by the plane as well. I mean, it goes along with this kind of burial of evidence. And it's also like one thing they propose in the podcast is like, why would you there's easier ways to get rid of these documents. Like, why stage like a having Tower 7 exploding and catching fire? Like, why would you go through all that effort to get rid of these documents? Like, there's definitely easier ways to do it.
Yeah.
But it sure does make a very comfortable excuse to say, like, all of these documents that were important got destroyed and now there's no evidence of it. That it ties off a lot of loose ends and you don't have to have certain people being responsible for the destruction of these documents.
Yeah, it is very strange the way that it happened, I think. Because, I mean, how long was it? Let's give this a goog. How long after building 7 did... Or after building, nine?
The timeline here, that's an important part. I was going to look that one up too. Because they said in the podcast that Tower 7 burned for 8.5 hours. And it was like, it was a slow burn because there was so much paper documents in there. And another thing that like they also brought up was the fact that this building had a ton of backup generators. And these generators ran off of diesel fuel. And they said that there was 42,000 gallons of diesel fuel there at the time, which is like...
That's a lot.
To me, that's a crazy amount to have. Like, I don't know how long they were planning to...
I mean, it's a big building.
Power.
Yeah. It is still a big building. Yeah, let's see here. Wow, I guess in 86, they leased the entire... 7 World Trade Center building for $3 billion over a term of 30 years.
Wow.
This is back in 86. Let's see. I think it was like later in the day, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, reading through Wikipedia is quite long. They put a lot of information here. Dang, I really want to find this out now.
Timeline's kind of important, though, because, like, if it's too quick, like, between when that towers were hit and then Tower 7 actually falling, how could it have that much time? Because, like, it didn't have the necessary same explosion, so it would need a lot longer.
Yeah. I mean, Building 7 was also a very large building in its own right. Yeah. I mean, it was 47 stories. It was still a very large building compared to everything that was around it. So it wasn't like a small feat for that thing to, you know, collapse. You'd have to have some serious damage. But then, you know, there was, they said on the podcast as... Fuck, sorry. Damn it, dude. There's a stupid ad that's just distracting me. I'm looking at this site. There's a stupid ad for Surprising Ancient History of Sex Toys.
Oh.
It's like the dumbest thing. It caught me off guard. Anyways, what I was saying is on the podcast, they also made the argument that there was another building, I think across the street from Building 7.
Yeah.
That had... Yeah, that one had to basically come down because of all the damage. And then right. There was another one that was like, it took 4 years to repair yep. because of the damage.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates. So you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Okay, so Tower 7 collapsed on at 5:20 p.m.
So the other buildings were like in the morning, you know? Yeah,
so that plenty of build time all.
They were also saying like there was people were, I can't remember who it was, but there was some guy who went on a TV show and said something along the lines of, what did he say? He said like...
Oh, Silverstein's pull it thing?
Yeah, we're going to pull it.
Yeah.
But I guess he was trying to say that they're going to not continue to fight the fire just for safety risk.
Right, to pull out the firefighters instead, you know, mitigate
not the destroy victims. The building.
Right. That's a good point. Another thing that like I would like to bring up with the whole pull it thing and the collapse of Tower 7 is the BBC reporter who 30 minutes before the building actually collapsed said that Tower 7 had already collapsed, and it looked like he's like getting his information from an earset receiver.
Hmm.
And it's like there's that one's definitely interesting. I don't know if you could completely say like, oh, because he's predicted it 30 minutes before, like it was obviously set to happen, it could have been planned. But at this point, 30 minutes before, that's already like 7 hours into this building burning. And I mean, you want to be, as a reporter, you want to be the first one to actually say like, look, this just happened. So I don't know if you could count that as like concrete evidence.
It is a bit suspicious, though.
It is
suspicious. Wasn't there a couple of instances of that as well? Like other news reporters getting stuff wrong?
Dude, I when I was looking to do some extra research into 9/11, there's so many of these fact checker websites now that like really just propagate the Google searches now.
And
it makes it even harder to find like actual reports and like all. But I am aware that there was a couple of agencies. I was watching a documentary a long time ago about this, probably back when I was in high school and I was getting into these conspiracies. But there was like multiple different perspectives of these actual news outlets predicting this, you know, a good chunk of time before the tower actually collapses, which is, I don't know, in this day and age, we can't really trust our media as much. There definitely seems like there's this, you know, kind of push with all of these larger corporations that control the media to control the narrative. So
yeah, it's like 97% owned privately.
Yep, exactly. So like, how can you discount that theory? If 30 minutes before, it's definitely something that's like, it doesn't really fit in that puzzle as well and stands out.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It's also like, at the time, everyone was watching the news.
Right.
So it's like, all eyes are on you. And, you know, you would want to make sure that what you're reporting is accurate and great.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to, honestly... I think it would be because one of the things in the beginning of the podcast that he was talking about was how a lot of men after the events were glued to the TV.
Yeah.
And he was saying like, I mean, it makes perfect sense. It's like there's some sort of threat, you know, as a man, you have this like instinctual drive to want to understand and be able to, you know,
help stand up and do something about
it. Yeah. But also like understand the threat,
right.
You know, and so a lot of men were completely glued to the TV, which makes sense. I mean, I think like. Even when I was in high school, that MH370, the Malaysian flight, went missing.
Yeah.
And that was like the biggest news coverage for weeks and weeks. And I remember I would always go to my grandparents' house before school and we would watch Good Morning America. And for a solid like week and a half, that was all they were talking about.
Yeah.
And I remember being like fascinated with it. I didn't really understand it enough because I was like, seventh grade or whatever,
right. But
you know,
still,
but it was
like,
still really fascinating.
Yeah, it's really grabbing. You really just, I mean, you get sucked into it.
Yeah, my grandpa was like, oh, he was obsessed with it.
Oh,
he like knew all the,
that's
like,
another really good story.
He was like my equivalent of like a Fox News dad.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. That was him. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, I think, honestly, the podcast that we listened to, I didn't feel like was as conspiratorial as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I agree. They really looked at the hard facts and they were able to disprove a lot of the stuff. I think when it comes to the actual 9/11 attacks, I think that based off of the evidence, what we see, yes, the attacks were very real and there was little to see it as like, you know, staged or set up with like explosions and fake planes. But I think another thing that we should also remember is like the events that kind of were surrounding 9/11 at the time. Like,
yeah,
I mean, we've already talked about the trillions of dollars that the Pentagon couldn't place. But then there's also the relationship that George Bush had to Bin Laden. So, like, back when George Bush was really trying to, you know, get into the presidential sphere, he had to raise a bunch of money. So Bush had this oil company at the time, and one of Bush's friends, James R. Bath, he was hired by George Bush to manage his assets. And a funny thing about James R. Bath is he was also hired by bin Laden to manage his assets. So while George Bush is trying to get this money, Bush's oil company is bought by Harkin, which is a Saudi Arabian oil company. And if you look at like what's going on in the Middle East during that time, you know, there is Saudi Arabia, Iran, all of these Middle Eastern countries are starting to get more oil. And that was like a threat to the USD trading with the oil, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a huge threat to us. So like, why would we want to attack Iran and these Middle Eastern countries is to, you know, get that power back so we have our economic upper hand on all these other countries. So how do you justify going to attack these countries in the first place? And I mean, there was a lot of dialogue before 9/11 too about like the war on terrorism, Al-Qaeda, and the what's going on in the Middle East. So, you know, this could be seen as like a way to like kind of bring the U.S. into the Middle East to actually disrupt things.
Yeah, it was kind of a catalyst in a way.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is interesting. Like if you look at like one of my favorite clips about this particular topic is there's a I'll try and find it and put it in the show right here. But there's a clip of a congressman who was talking about 9/11, and he was saying like that someone else came up to him and they're like, oh, we're going to war with Iraq.
Yeah.
Or we're going to war with Iran. Or yeah. I think it was Iraq at the time. And he's like, why? And he's like, I don't know. I have no idea. And he was basically saying like, well, there's a lot of oil over there. We have a military that's really good at like taking down countries yep. and invading stuff and shit like this. And it's weird because it's like, you got to think if people were thinking like that at the time, you know, like people in Congress, you know, it seemed like it was, what was it? The 18th of September, we declared war on whatever. Yeah, it was like within the week though, within the week.
Right.
And, I wonder, like, all of these people that were sitting in office at the time, like, were they thinking, like, what the fuck are we doing here? Or, like, because you have to think, like, every state senator couldn't have been in on it, you know?
No, like, no, not at all. I mean, like they said in the podcast, the more people you have trying to hold a secret, the harder it is to actually
exactly,
keep it.
Exactly, yeah. Compartmentalization is a great tool in that sense.
Right.
But, yeah, I wonder, like, if you are really, like, well-versed, because I have to think that there are non-corrupt politicians. I would hope to think so, especially back in 2001. Maybe there was a couple.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, like, what were they thinking at the time? Like, what the fuck are we doing here? You know? And it's like, but it's very interesting the way that anti-terror and this idea of, like, national security was kind of weaponized in a way for us to invade all of these other countries and take down, like, Al-Qaeda and bin Laden and then ISIS and all this stuff. It was like Americans took that very personal.
Yep.
And that was one of the things that 9/11 kind of ignited in people. Like, they were saying on the podcast, just the stat was that hate against Middle Easterners or, you know, like Muslims went up like 1600%, which is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, just thinking about COVID, I mean, Asian hate went through the roof as well, you know, and it's just like, there's just people who like just need someone to blame and it's just
want someone to be angry at.
Yeah.
Once you have something as salient as like your whole country being attacked, that's going to really.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that was used as a very, very good, like, fear tool, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
I mean, and likely, I mean, rightfully so to some degree. I mean, there was a lot of, like, you know, you look at, like, all the mass shootings that happened in Paris and, like, stuff like that. Like, there, like, terrorism was, and it still is in some areas, a big problem.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but it was kind of used as a tool for us to invade these other countries and stuff.
And, I mean, yes, terrorism at the end of the day, it's really fucked up what happens. But I think what we see, like, as a common pattern within the United States government or these intelligence communities is this actual weaponization of these ideas and what we already see in the world to, you know, misconstrue things and to get people to push their own agenda. I mean, it's like why we saw what happened with Northwoods, and it's why we see things like Project MKUltra. Like, our government's not just this super, like, trustworthy group. they're trying to figure out ways to control and to advance their or increase their power. It's just at the end of the day, it's the military industrial complex that was put in action right there.
That's another thing too, you know,
because war makes a shit ton of money.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're seeing that now with Ukraine, you know. Yep. Like the US is like, oh shit, we accidentally spent a couple billion dollars extra, sorry. Yep. Guys, you know, it's like, no you didn't.
No,
that wasn't an accident.
That's a whole other fucking topic.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. But I mean, it is like, that is one of the biggest reasons why I'm kind of a little bit unsure about this whole like public narrative. It's like, you look at what happened, not just on 9/11, but you look at what happened as a result of that, and you're like, why the fuck did we spend so much money in the Middle East trying to fight terrorism? You know, it's like, maybe some of it was valid, but a lot of it, I think, was just like taking over, trying to get oil and shit.
Yeah, to get those scarce resources. I mean, another thing that another perspective that's important for understanding like what resources the Middle East has is they also have a bunch of these opium fields. And those are used in a lot of the opioids that we have today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that with the opioid crisis that happened.
A huge market now.
Huge market. And it's a $1 billion industry. So, of course, you get more scarce resources. You can keep just pumping that into the system that's already going.
There's also, we've talked about this a lot, just you and me, but there's this idea that, like, government uses fear as a way to control citizens.
Oh, of course.
Right? So it's like, if there's a threat that's way beyond your capability of handling, you want someone else to step in there, you know?
Exactly.
And so it's like, you can use that as a tool to gain control over people. And I think that that's what they've done a lot.
Oh, 100%. Like, even, it goes back so far to even after the Second World War, when we started seeing things like the war against communism and stuff, like the extreme push to really make, like, anybody who has different views from capitalism, like socialism or communism, to be, like, the enemies, these evil entities.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just what they do, is they like to make other people the enemy and push fear so they can control the narrative.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's unfortunate because it's like, you know, people are uninformed about what's actually going on, and they're scared. And so it's like, yeah, of course you're going to be like, oh, yeah, totally, government, we should go after terrorism, you know, like,
right.
It just seems logical. But then it's like, what's the actual motivation going on here? And I think that that's the benefit of, like, having these conversations many years later, is like, people aren't as emotionally invested anymore. Right. You know, like, having this conversation the day after would be pretty rough.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, 22 years afterwards, you know, it's like, you can kind of go back and talk about some of these points. And there's a lot more information that's come out since then that kind of illuminates some of these, like, darker undertones that, you know, the government was doing.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, another point is, like, that we weren't even born around the time, so we don't have, like, you know, the same, like,
I'm not emotionally invested,
exactly.
I mean, obviously, like, when I watch these videos, you know, it makes me cry. I'm terrible emotional reaction from it, you know. Yeah. How could you not? But it's like, I wasn't there at the time. I wasn't, like, I don't remember where I was.
Right. That's not to discount, like, anything that happened in those days. Like, I remember when I was little, we visited New York, and I got to see the museum, and, like, you hear all of the phone calls, you see all of
it's
the videos.
Dark, it's dude. It's hard to do. I remember as a kid, I was, like, I think I was in high school. I can't remember. I think we were in Washington, D.C., and we went to the, what was it? It was the memorial for World War II and, like, the whole anti-Semitic thing. And it was, what was the name of the fucking museum, though? But let me tell you, dude, that was, like, the roughest thing I've ever had to do in my life. Like, that was, I mean, besides, like, physical endurance or anything like that, that was very, very hard. That was probably...
Yeah.
Aside from, like, breakups in high school and shit, that was, like, the hardest emotional thing. Yeah.
The biggest pit in your stomach makes you nauseous. It's horrible. Like, at the end of the day, it's a major atrocity, and thousands of Americans lost their lives to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it makes it even more sinister to think that our own government would turn against our own people like that.
Yeah.
And create such a terrible catastrophe, and then blame a different group to go justify them to go make more money and destabilize the global economy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is sad, but it also, like, I think a lot of people, and this is, I think, just a built-in part of humans, is, like, we never want to believe that the people who are in charge are, like, evil.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
We never want to believe that, you know? And so it's like, that's another thing that, you know, these news agencies and it is another way of controlling the public narrative is it's like, hey, we're all on the same side here, you know?
Right.
But it's like, really, maybe we're not, you know, or there's other influences and stuff. And so it gets very, very weird, but people don't want to believe that the government would do something so atrocious.
Right.
It's like, that's, I think, another reason why we have people like, you know, Auschwitz deniers or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, maybe, I'm sure there's a bunch of ignorance built into that, but it's also, I think, at a basic level, just like, people don't want to believe that humans can be that evil.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a great point. Because we do a lot of evil shit, and I mean, especially your own government, the people that have been...
Yeah.
You know, trying to help us for so long, once you like figure out they're evil, and you're going to want to deny that as far as you can. I mean, like, I try to talk to my parents sometimes about the conspiracy stuff, and I'll be really good. I'll bring my facts. I'll bring up like, look at the, like, how can you look at this and think that this is real?
Yeah.
Like, they're so easy to discount it. It's just, you know, the way that our brains actually pick up and store data. Like, we don't want to go against that because we don't want to think like, holy shit. If they're doing this, then what else are they doing? It starts to completely unravel your life. And like, especially looking at like something as big as like a governmental conspiracy, that's a huge aspect of the world we live in. And if that starts to really be true, then what are we like, what is going on?
Yeah, that creates a lot of fear in people, you know, and it becomes hard to navigate. But that's also, like I said earlier, that's a tool that they use. You know, it's like, if you feel like someone is about to take your wallet, you're more likely to give up a dollar to save your wallet.
Right.
You know, like, that's just logic. And it's the same kind of thing with, you know, major international conspiracies, is it's like, you never want to believe that the people who are working, who are supposed to be on your side, are not on your side. You know, it's, it's unfortunate.
Yeah. And like, that's why there's so much of like this media narrative to like, you know, control these media groups and push a narrative. I mean, it's what the CIA's goal has been since the founding back a long time ago. And like, there's one famous quote by William Casey that's, we'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false. And, you know, if you look at things like these giant conspiracies, they already do a really good job at covering this stuff up to, you know, make people who are actually trying to think for themselves, look at the evidence and like really find empirical evidence. They just can be discounted as crazy because, you know, with all of the ways that they push information, how could just these smaller pieces of information that slip through actually be true?
Yeah.
Oh, one other thing I wanted to talk about was the, we talked about this last night about the, picture that was found at Jeffrey Epstein's estate of, George Bush holding paper airplanes next to two Jenga towers that had just fallen over.
Oh, yeah.
That painting I found out was called War Games, which I think is a very fitting title for that because, you know, the whole aspect of war has just, you know, war at the end of the day, like we were talking about, is a way to make money. And it, at the end of the day, you can, if you play the game, you can win. And, you know, by creating a terrorist attack that makes you able to go to war, that's like one of the steps of the game. Get them involved, have the public to back you, go take some scarce resources, make a shit ton of money, destabilize the economy, a power.
Yeah, because I mean, if you think about it, and this was always like weird to think about growing up, was like, why are we always in war? You know, like, why is there, even as a kid, you know, like, there was, like, the, there was always some shit going on with Russia.
Yep.
There was, like, you know, the thing against terrorism, all this shit, like, ISIS, all of it. But then you think about it, and you're, like, you look at, like, the Vietnam War, the Korean War, like, a lot of these other, like, the involvement with Cuba and stuff. Yep. And it's, like, you kind of have to come to the realization that for a lot of time, the U.S. and still the U.S. just likes war. Like, we make a lot of money off of it.
Oh yeah,
military industrial complex is super powerful, and so it's it's like, sometimes it's like, I understand people are like, oh, the U.S. is like the most powerful military, it's our job to be like the police of the world and stuff, but it's also our job to like mind our own fucking business sometimes, you know? It's
not
like,
force ourselves in,
not force our fucking politics on every other fucking nation. It's like, this is why a lot of countries don't like Americans, because
understandably
we
so.
Just force our culture on other countries.
Yeah, we take over, we rob them of all their resources. We make the areas more poor, and then we take over. We make them sign contracts so they are legally required to trade with us, use the U.S.
Yeah,
dollar.
Use our currency, yep.
And it's understandably so why a lot of these countries do not like us.
Yeah.
And now we're at this point where we're just kind of trying to, you know, keep going with our role and trying to, I mean, it's like what's happening with Ukraine. It's like we're continuing our role as this super powerful country who can keep influencing stuff. And
yeah,
at some point it's going to be our demise.
I saw this stat one time where it was like, because I've always wondered this. I was like, why are all these other countries so invested in our elections? Like, what is it about our election? But then I saw a thing and it was like, why other countries are, you know, watching our elections, and it put a thing of like all the military bases around the world. And
thousands.
It's like every fucking way.
Yeah.
Like our dick
everywhere.
Is in everything, dude.
Yeah.
Like it's, yeah, we're everywhere. So it's like, of course people are going to pay attention to that. That makes sense. It's also, I will say, our elections are very entertaining. Like,
yeah.
I mean, this last one, as far as comedy and stuff, you know, it's very sad because it's like you don't want the most serious part of your
democracy to be a
fucking joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really embarrassing. But it is also like, you know, it's like, what are you going to do? Sometimes you just got to sit back and laugh at it. But
true.
It is. It is unfortunate. And it is crazy to think about how much influence we have in world politics and world.
Oh, yeah.
You know, involvement in general.
And the UN.
Yeah, there's all kinds of shit going on.
It's bad, man.
Well, I think we're going to wrap up here pretty soon. Do you have any other points that you'd like to make about 9/11? You have a large notebook in front of you.
I was just writing down all the empirical stuff. Specifically about 9/11. Not about 9/11, no.
Well, okay. What's your favorite conspiracy?
Favorite?
Yeah. Or maybe most intriguing.
Ah, dude, one of my favorite.
It's
kind of
weird
to
ask what your favorite conspiracy is.
Is banking. It goes all, it just like the core topic of banking and how long banks have been around.
Central banking. Yeah. I was listening to JFK Jr. talk about that, and he was talking about like all the presidents that got assassinated, like Lincoln, JFK. There was another one. I can't remember what his name was.
It was. You're talking about all the people that were trying to abolish central banking.
Yeah, they were trying to abolish central banking, and they got killed.
This is not a good example for this topic, but it was Hitler who was really an advocate against central banking. But,
oh, really?
Yes. No, but central banking is like one of these major problems to why we see these powerful entities being able to control things like, you know, BlackRock, the Rothschilds, all of these companies.
When you own all of the money,
exactly.
It's like you own all the control because everything revolves around money.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the perfect example of this is just, like, even the game Monopoly. Like, it shows you what happens when you control the money, the land, and it. The whole purpose of making that game was to show, like, what happens within the state of our system.
Yeah. Did you see the feminist version of Monopoly?
No.
They made a feminist version, and it's supposed to make it more equal for women, even though it just gives women an advantage, which doesn't seem like equality. But, yeah, you get women get, like, $250 when they pass go. There's, like, a bunch of incentives to make it easier for them.
Yeah.
And I think it's hilarious because it's, like, it's so funny to use a game like Monopoly as a form of like libertation, you know, like or liberation.
Ironic.
Yeah. It's like, that's the most ironic shit in the world.
Oh, God.
You know? It's also like, I don't know, making it more advantageous for one person isn't making it equal at all. That makes it unequal.
That's not the definition of equality at all.
No, but it is scary. Like, you know, if you, even like just a simple experiment, if you give everybody, if you give everybody $100 to gamble and you all gamble against each other, eventually one person is going to acquire all the money.
Yeah.
Like that's just how it works.
Right.
Which is weird. I hear Jordan Peterson talk about this a lot where it's like, we don't really know why that happens. There's something about like our hierarchical systems as, you know, evolved beings are like somehow weirdly wired to work like this.
Yeah.
Like it's like you look at, authors or athletes or any like high performing or creative field, there's going to be a lot of people struggling and then one dude at the top, you know, and we don't really know how to avoid that.
Right.
But I think it's scary when you think about governments and stuff, because it's like, that's the opposite of what you want, you know?
Right.
you want shared economic resources and opportunities right. for everybody.
And I think like the book Animal Farm is like it just highlights that. It's yeah. like, at the end of the day, no matter what system you use, whatever your democracy government style you want to use, at the end of the day, it's humans that are. Really
it comes
the problem.
Back to the same issues. Yeah. Right. That so book is amazing, that? Though, I will say. I read yeah. that book last year.
Yeah, such a good book.
And it's a great analogy, I think, for what's yeah. going on in America. It's like we left the UK to avoid tyranny and yep. monarchies.
To avoid
and
the
then,
big banks, too. That's another
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, and then now we're in the same position.
Same boat.
We just blindly ended up in the same position, right. you know?
It's just so hard to fight these actual entities. It's the thing is, like,
well, like you said, it's human nature to a certain extent. It's human nature. And when it's unchecked, it's like, you know, it's like you can't expect a kid to not steal from a cookie jar if you don't tell him not to steal from a cookie jar or make a punishment or a reward and like not incentivizing stealing. You know, it's like there's, you have to have a system where it incentivizes good behavior and punishes bad behavior. And we don't have that. We have the opposite.
And you need to hold powerful people accountable. It's like when we have our Congress that can just be blatantly bought out and have their ideas not be in the mind of the citizens, but be in the minds for corporations and the good of corporations and making money, you're obviously going to have a problem.
Yeah.
Like that's the what government should be for, is to protect the rights of people and to uphold welfare for people, to make our lives better, not to...
I also think the government... Yeah, I agree. I think the government also has a job and a responsibility to protect the citizens from the government.
Oh, I hear.
You know, I mean, that's what the basis of America was.
Right.
That's why we have the Second Amendment. It's not so that you can protect yourself. I mean, it is, but it's also so that you can protect when your government is corrupt. Yeah.
They planned for that shit.
And they
Thank
knew
God
that.
We do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck.
Anyways, check out the podcast, Jimmy Akins. It's Akin, actually. Akin. Jimmy Akins, Mysterious World. Great show. Check it out if you get a time. And yeah, that's all we have for you this week. Adam should be back next week. Hayden, thank you for subbing
in. Thank you for having me, man.
Great guest. And yeah, we will see you guys next week. Peace.